to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
Each year in the United States, roughly 10 million people seriously consider suicide. If suicide is a public health issue, then suicide prevention requires the shared responsibility of the entire community across all sectors.
I'm going to share my story with you today, and I hope that when I'm done, that you'll be more aware of what it's like to live with a mental health condition, and that by listening to my story, you might be more willing to reach out to someone who you see is struggling or who is afraid to reach out.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, Lane County, and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
This week's City Club of Eugene, Suicide as a Public Health Emergency, contains descriptions that some listeners might find disturbing. In about 15 minutes, we'll hear from a suicide survivor who recounts a suicide attempt that includes graphic depictions. If you or anyone you know is in trouble or has any questions about getting help, the Suicide Prevention Lifeline can be reached at 1-800-273-8255.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's October 11th, 2019 program, Suicide as a Public Health Emergency. My name is Eric Richardson, and I serve as president of the City Club of Eugene. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. You are also able, through our website, to present any kind of ideas around programming that you might want to see. Now on to today's program. Please welcome to the podium Ralph Pledger, who will introduce today's guests. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Suicide is a serious public health issue that has touched the lives of thousands in Lane County and elsewhere. Lane County's suicide rate is 50% greater than the U.S. national average. Between 2000 and 2016, more than 1,000 Lane County residents died by suicide. Today's speakers will address questions such as, what themes are commonly heard in the stories of those who attempt suicide? What can anyone do to help someone who is struggling? This program will describe the risk factors, groups at special risk, prevention strategies, crisis assessment and hope and recovery after a suicide attempt. We will have three speakers. First one will be Roger Brubaker, who is the Suicide Prevention and Mental Health Promotion Coordinator and Senior Community Health Analyst with Lane County Health and Human Services. He'll share statistics on suicide in Lane County, including who is most at risk and why, and discuss resources and effective prevention strategies. He will explore the issue of connectedness and how prevention requires shared responsibility of the entire community, including both lay people and professionals. After Roger, Crystal Keke-Roland, who is a licensed clinical social worker currently working as a mental health evaluator on the crisis team at Peace Health Sacred Heart, River Bend, and the University District Hospitals will speak. Crystal has past experience with public health campaigns and specializes in creating tools and systems for promoting behavior change. She believes storytelling is a powerful way to help people transform their lives and change public attitudes and behaviors. Prior to her work at Peace Health, Crystal created and coordinated a speakers bureau in Sacramento. It was composed of everyday people who are living with mental health conditions and who share their stories of hope and recovery to raise awareness and reduce the stigma of mental illness. We will also hear from Mike, who is a suicide survivor and who has received treatment at Peace Health. He will tell his story of hope and recovery. So, Roger.
Good afternoon. I'm Roger Brubaker. I work as the Suicide Prevention and Mental Health Promotion Coordinator with Lane County Public Health. And I'll share a little bit about some of the population level statistics and information around suicide in the U.S. and specifically here in Lane County. So as was shared already, suicide is a serious and growing public health concern. There, since 1999, the suicide rate in the United States has increased by 25%. Each year in the United States, roughly 10 million people seriously consider suicide. Among those, around 1.25 million make an attempt. And among those, roughly around 50,000 people die each year in the United States by suicide. So what's that mean here in Lane County? So in Lane County, as was shared earlier, we have suicide takes a uniquely troubling toll. Our rate is 50% greater than the national average, meaning that between 2000 and 2018, 1,260 people have died in our community by suicide. Last year in 2018, we had our greatest number of deaths, with 93 people dying by suicide. So that provides a little bit of a picture of the impact of suicide, but who is it that dies by suicide? So we know on a national level, state level, and local, that men are 4 times as likely to die by suicide compared to women. Specifically, as men age, their risk increases exponentially, meaning that our older adult men who are 85 years and older have the greatest per capita risk of any age group. This is roughly around 8 times the general population. If we look at suicide by race and ethnicity, those who identify as American Indian, Native Alaskan populations have the highest per capita risk, specifically younger adults in that group, which is in contrast to any other younger adult population in the United States. When we look at other categories such as veteran status, here in Lane County we know that 1 out of every 4 deaths by suicide is a veteran. Nationally, we know that the veteran suicide rate is roughly around 2 times the general population, making it a population of serious concern as well. There's some other categories that are important to consider as well. So while there's no national or state or even local statistics on mortality by sexuality or gender identity, we do know some information about people in those categories that seriously consider suicide and make attempts. In the data that we have that looks at youth here in Lane County, we know that the highest rate of ideation or serious thoughts about suicide and attempts is within our LGBTQ population, specifically, again, among youth. This primarily has to do with the level of acceptance that they receive from both their family and community, making our role as community members absolutely integral to preventing deaths among that population. So that's who dies by suicide, but it's also, we need to consider some of the circumstances and risk factors that lead to those deaths as points of intervention. One of the things that comes up most often around suicide is a concern about mental illness. And when we look at the research, we know that roughly around 90% of people who die by suicide either have a diagnosis or there's strong evidence that there was some sort of mental health problem in their lifetime or at the time of their death. And this is a real problem, because what we also know is that roughly just about 50% or so of people who die by suicide ever sought or were able to access behavioral health care, meaning that the system that is set up to support people in distress doesn't always connect with them. Again, kind of putting the burden on us as community members rather than simply just the healthcare system. What we also know is that 85% of people who die by suicide made contact with their primary care provider sometime in a year before their death, making primary care an absolutely critical touch point for suicide prevention. We also know that substance misuse plays a large role in suicide deaths, both in the disorder and distress that it causes in people's lives in the long term, but also at the time of death, potentially, in terms of intoxication. And the primary substance that drives these numbers is alcohol. It's the most accessible, available drug in our community, and it drives our suicide rate year by year. But then on a more level, some of us may not be able to connect all the times with mental illness or substance abuse if it doesn't play a role in our lives. But something that plays a role in every single one of our lives is human connection. We are social animals, and we fundamentally need human connection to thrive and survive. And when we don't feel that, when we feel isolated, when we feel lonely, sometimes people may consider suicide as a way out of that deep existential pain. One of the other primary drivers of suicide is trauma. So any kind of traumatic experience, particularly in childhood. So specifically, adverse childhood experiences, being events of abuse or neglect, have long-term consequences and are one of the strongest correlates of suicide in adult populations. Last but not least, we need, in terms of risk factors, we need to consider the environment that people live in. When people have access to lethal means, and especially highly lethal means, such as firearms, that also drives the suicide rate in communities. So it's one thing to look at the tragedy and the problems and what drives suicide. It's also absolutely critical that we think about, why do people survive? Why don't people die by suicide? And again, I have to return back to that theme of connectedness. If suicide is a public health issue, then suicide prevention requires the shared responsibility of the entire community across all sectors. This includes both general community members and professionals working to do nothing less than transform our culture of meritocracy into a kinder society concerned for the intrinsic value of the individual rather than their output in our society. This also requires that we have compassion and concern for those who are experiencing mental illness, mental health problems, and distress. That we do not stigmatize them with our language, with our behavior, and that we include them in our lives and our community because they are a part of our community. It's also important that we are able to promote resilience. So when trauma happens, because trauma will and distress will happen, that we promote resilience in our community so that people feel supported and have the coping skills necessary that they can rebound from those events. So how can community members get involved? Later on, we'll share some kind of more therapeutic, behavioral health care related elements to this, but just general population, what do we do? If people are interested, they can go to preventionlane.org, where there's a lot of resources here locally that describe our suicide prevention program, where people can learn about suicide and suicide prevention. They can look at data, they can look at the resources, so they can understand this very complex phenomenon. We also provide a host of different trainings around suicide prevention and postvention, meaning that after a death by suicide is absolutely a critical moment to promote healing and reduce risk. So when I use that term postvention, that's what that's related to. And so we provide a number of trainings for professionals and general community members so that they can be involved, have the skills that they need to save a life. Last but not least, we also serve as an organizing body to the Suicide Prevention Coalition of Lane County, which is a model organization that brings together professionals and lay people to be a part of the conversation and do the work of suicide prevention. And all this information, like I shared, can be found at preventionlane.org. And with that, I will give my time over to Mike.
Hi, my name is Mike. I'm a father of three boys. I have three grandchildren. I'm a muscle car enthusiast. I've owned many in my life. I also live with bipolar disorder with psychotic features. I'm going to share my story with you today, and I hope that when I'm done that you'll be more aware of what it's like to live with a mental health condition and that by listening to my story, you might be more willing to reach out to someone who you see is struggling or who is afraid to reach out. Right now, I'm on the path to recovery, but it hasn't always been like this. When I was in my late 20s, I started to notice terrible mood swings, bouts of depression, a lot of anxiety, and there was a lot of chaos going on in my life. I was working, I was married, and being a father. Eventually, things started to smooth out a little bit, but after my doctor prescribed a medication which seemed to help. In 2013, my doctor took me off the medication that was working for me because he was worried about some side effects, and even though I was working, my doctor tried many different medications and none of them seemed to work. I went into a downward spiral. I started having horrible mood swings. I started to have worsening psychosis. I thought people were after me, laughing at me, talking about me. I even thought people were putting poison on my door handles at home. Living with this day in and day out for 2 years was so frustrating and scary. One day I was doing laundry at the laundromat and I made the decision to end my life. It was like turning on a light switch. I just couldn't live with the symptoms any longer. So I just put enough gas in my car to get up into the hills, and my goal was to kill myself. I drove up as far as my car would go. I actually ended up on top of a hill. My car actually ran out of gas. I used a knife I had in my tackle box to cut my wrist really deep enough so that I was sure to die, and I got out of the car. I put on my favorite t-shirt, threw my cell phone into the ravine, and pushed my car off with it. I didn't want anyone to find me. I took off into the woods and found a place to sit. After a couple hours, bugs were starting to crawl all over me because of the blood, and I got scared and I started to change my mind. So I got up and started trying to walk out. I walked through a ravine and kept falling. It took most of the night because I kept tripping over down trees, waist-deep brush, and scraping my wrists, which were beginning to hurt really bad. I also thought I was seeing shadows in the distance between the trees, so I started yelling for help. I finally made it out and ended up in an old growth stand. I couldn't even see the sky. It was so dark. There were so many trees. I realized no one was out there. I was alone, and I started to freeze to death. I fell to my knees and passed out for an unknown amount of time. When I woke up, the sun was coming up and I realized I was no longer alone. I looked over my right shoulder and behind me were two wolves, the white wolf and the black wolf. They were sitting straight up and staring at me. I looked in front of me and I seen the rest of the pack lying on the ground about 15 feet away. That's when I realized the shadows I seen the night before in the ravine were probably the wolves. Seeing them now in the light of day, I was afraid. I thought they were going to attack me. So I got up and I stumbled away from them, and they did not follow or chase. They let me leave and just watched as I stumbled away. I kept falling down on the clothes, and my clothes were caked with blood. At one point, I was on all fours crawling. I was so weak. I was dry heaving constantly, and I finally found a game trail. It went two different ways. I wasn't sure which way to go, and I seen this little bluebird in a tree, and it was just chirping away. So I just asked the bird to show me the way out, and it flew to the right, so I took the right path. And it actually led me to a logging road, where I finally passed out and was later found by a couple of hunters. I woke up at the hospital north of here. While I was there, I heard two nurses making jokes about me, saying that I was going to the hospital in Salem, the Oregon State Hospital. It made me very angry and hurt. Why would they do that? I didn't end up in Salem, but I was hospitalized psychiatrically here in Eugene at the Behavioral Health Unit. I was in the hospital for around 5 days, and then I joined the transition team. If you don't know what the transition team is, it's a program for people who live with different mental health conditions. We are together in groups. We do art, play games, and we do things together in the community. We hike together, we go bowling together, we have lunch. I'm part of a supportive community that understands and supports me. I don't know where I'd be without the support of the transition team. I'm on the path to recovery. I work out because my health is important to me. I do things with my friends and I spend time with my family. Two of my grandchildren live out of state, but one of my granddaughters lives here in town, and I love taking her to the park with my son whenever I can. I'm grateful to Peace Health for this program, which is helping me get back on my path to recovery. I'd like to wrap up with a few thoughts. The first is the importance of community. I'm a part of the Peace Health transition team and grateful because this is my support network and I know I'm not alone. Because of this community, I'm here speaking to you today and trying to be a good advocate for people in crisis. The second is some suggestions about how you can support people in your community. Remember that people with mental health conditions are everyday people, and give them the same loving kindness you'd give someone living with any other medical condition. Reach out to someone you know who might be struggling, or if you find yourself struggling, don't be afraid to reach out for help. Thank you for letting me share my story with you today.
Thank you, Mike, for sharing your story. It takes a lot of courage to do that. My name is Crystal Kekai Roland. I'm a mental health clinician with Peace Health. I want to thank the City Club for having us here today, for starting the conversation about suicide. I'm on the crisis team at Peace Health Riverbend and University District Hospitals, and I sit every day with people who are having suicidal ideation or who have made an attempt. Sometimes it's not their first. And as a member of the crisis team, it's my job to really figure out what's going to be the best thing for them. Do they need a conversation with someone like me? Do they need resources in the community, maybe support services? Or do they need inpatient psychiatric hospitalization? Sometimes people first need medical care and healing before we can address any of that. And we are there with them through that process as well. I've been on the crisis team about 14 months. And during that time, I've had interviews with 531 people. So to give you an idea of the volume of the work that we do, I'm one person of about 15 people. And in 14 months, I've had interviews with 531 people who are having suicidal ideation or some type of mental health crisis. And during that time, I've definitely noticed some themes. People tell me about trauma. People tell me about feeling hopeless. People tell me about depression and anxiety that do not relent. They feel like no one hears them. They feel alone. They feel like no one wants to understand. Some have lost a connection with a community. Some have lost their will to live. And all of these things together culminate in somebody feeling like suicide is the only option to get relief from what they're going through. So you heard both Mike and Roger talk about community, and I want to share a little story about community and how important community is. A few years back, I was involved with an animal rescue. And this was a place where animals could go to live until they were no longer here. And they could live their days out. And at one time, we had 53 different animals. We had goats and cows, and we had sheep, and of course, dogs and cats and pigs. And we had a turkey named Thomas. And we had a Tennessee Walker named the General. And it was the General's self-appointed job to move the animals from the pasture to the back pasture where they would spend the day. And if it was time to move back for sleep and eat in the front pasture, and we weren't fast enough, the General would let us know, and he'd bang his hoof on the gate until we complied with his order of moving them, hence the name the General. And so one day after we had moved the animals to the back pasture, we noticed that the General was down. And for those of you that have horses, you know that this is never really a good thing. And he had gone down in the pond, and his tail and his back legs were kind of in the pond, and we went back there to try to help him up. And he just couldn't get up. So we called the vet out, and the vet said, you know, he's just old. It might be his time. And so the plan was just to keep an eye on him during the day and have the vet come back out. And so as evening got closer, you could see the animals kind of congregating at the gate, and we went back there to move them, and just completely saddened that this animal was still down. And do you know, that horse got himself up, dusted himself off, and he pushed his way to the front of the line as if to say, this is my job. And he moved those animals to the front pasture. Having a job was important to him. Having a purpose was important to him. This was his community, and it was important to him. And I learned so many lessons like this from these animals, and it's no different with people. So you may be reflecting on your own sense of community and what community means to you, and you may be wondering, you know, what can I as one community member do? Well, we know that all change starts with us. And so we have actually made a handout for you, 7 ways that we think you can be a resource to someone in your community. The first one is reach in. I think every single one of us is probably one of those friends that says, hey, if you need anything, just call. But are you that fearless friend that reaches into someone? Mike talked about that. Someone reached in. Someone reached out to him in a time of need. Are you that friend that can do that for somebody? 2, listen. Listen to what people are saying, but also listen to what they're not saying. Read between the lines. And don't be afraid to ask. Have you thought of ending your life? 3, know the signs. American Foundation for Suicide Prevention says that people who are at greatest risk for suicide have changes in mood, depression, loss of interest, irritability, changes in behavior. They may be using substances increasingly, actively looking for a way to end their life, maybe researching online, withdrawing from family and friends. They might be giving away possessions. They might be actually telling people goodbye. So know those signs. 4, end the silence. Depression and suicide thrive in silence. So don't be afraid to start a conversation with someone that you're worried about. And if you yourself have been feeling stressed or down and have thought about ending your own life, tell someone. Anxiety and depression are bullies, and they will bully you until you address them. Call or meet with a friend or family member. Tell them how you're feeling. Go to the emergency department. In our community, we have a place called Hourglass. Go to Hourglass and talk to somebody. 5, know your resources. We have some resources in the back, but we would encourage you to know your local resources. If someone, a friend or family member, a neighbor needed help, would you know where to send them? Would you know who to call? We'd like you to find out. Be an advocate. Talk to your community leaders. Find out what's being done in your area about suicide prevention. What resources are available? And if you see a gap in services, help try to close that gap. And 7, take a stand. Roger talked a little bit about this. Help create a community that that supports without stigmatizing. People living with mental health conditions are subjected to a lot of stereotypes and sometimes even jokes. I hear jokes directed toward people with mental health conditions that would never be made toward someone with another medical condition. So be that person. You can be the person that chooses not to participate in stigmatizing language. And if we create that culture, maybe we can get more people to reach out. Again, thank you for having us here today. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our Facebook page for more topics. We hope you are inspired to join us for our next podcast episode.